Hey everybody, it's Bob Saget here. And before we start this episode with Brittany Furlan, I wanted to tell you something I'm doing this Wednesday, March 3rd. It's Hump Day. It's a special thing I'm doing. It's a live streaming show that I am hosting and doing comedy on with people. You guys will be on camera with me. That's like an unusual thing, and it's through Looped Live. It's a live stream event on March 3rd, this Wednesday. Just join me. It'll be fun. It's cheap because it needs to be right now, right? And it's an unfiltered conversation. So that means 15 and up. You don't need to hear about my wiener if you're under 15. If you're over 15, you kind of need to. No, I'm just kidding. But my wiener and a chicken, that's just against the law. Maybe it's not. Is that against the law? Anyway, you'll get answers to questions like that. And it'll be fun to talk about my career because I'm a narcissist, kind of, sort of, but I'm also empathetic, so I can help you with your issues. And you'll be on camera with me, and it's a live event. You won't be able to see it afterward. And I'm also doing a virtual meet and greet afterward. So that's unusual. That's like a one-on-one thing. Whatever. Tickets are on sale now, and this is how you do it. Go into your browser, type this in, events.loopedlive.com/Bob Saget. So Looped Live is L-O-O-P-E-D. And live, well, you know, if I have to tell you, L-I-V-E. Well, I did. Anyway, go to it, events.loopedlive.com/Bob Saget. If you can't remember that, look on Twitter or Instagram. It's listed there. And I hope to see you, and literally see you, on Wednesday night, March 3rd, for Hump Day. And now, here comes my episode with the wonderful Brittany Furlan. Hey, everybody. Bob Saget's Here For You is the name of this podcast. It's another podcast, but not to me. It's a way of life. It's talking to people, catching up with friends. Recently had people that people really laughed hard at, John Lovitz and Gilbert Gottfried, and just a lot of Fortune Feimster, a lot of people that I love. And I have someone today that is really just a strong energy, and I've been listening to her podcast, and I just really like her. And it's Brittany Furlan, and the name of her podcast is Worst Firsts. And I recently did her podcast and I enjoyed it because I've had many worst firsts. I mean, a lot of us look at our life and go, man, would I have liked to do that differently? Or God, do you remember the time that I did that? And I'm full of those. So I got to talk about it on her podcast. And this is my podcast. Bob Saget's Here For You. So this is an action-packed one. She's really funny and has a lot of good thoughts about mental health and about physical health and just ways to keep yourself from being fear-based and from having panic attacks. So that's about to happen as I let her into my Zoom. And of course, you do what you do with this podcast. You rate, review, you subscribe, you can leave comments, but make them positive. Otherwise, you know, it's no fun. So I'm wishing you guys the best and wanting you to enjoy this. So, you know, subscribe and listen or download or whatever the hell you want to do. And here comes Brittany Furlan. Hi, Brittany.
Hi, Bob. Thanks for having me on today.
And thanks for having me on your podcast, which is Worst Firsts, which I loved doing so much because I have a lot of them.
You were great on there, guys. It was amazing. So if you listen, you love Bob on here, make sure to check him out on my podcast, Worst First. He really came prepared more than most people, which was so nice.
Well, I wake up knowing the things I wish I had done right. You know, I try to think positive, as we talked about on your podcast, but I also, there's a Jackson Brown lyric. Do you like Jackson Brown?
I don't know who that is.
Yeah, Tommy Lee does. He's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and he's pretty brilliant. He actually wrote Somebody's Baby that was in Fast Times.
Oh, okay.
And he also wrote Take It Easy that the Eagles sang. And he's and he's an amazing person and writer, and he's a poet, and he has a lyric that I love, which is don't confront me with my failures, I have not forgotten them.
Facts.
So that's when people come up to you and they say, and that we're in a culture where people want to cancel you right away. And they go, you know what you do that I don't like? It's like, you know, I know. I already know. You know, I don't need to. Now you're a really good communicator. How long have you been doing your podcast for?
My podcast just hit 100 episodes like this week. And so I've been doing it for about a year, but you know, like you were saying, I think people like us we're just big talkers.
Right.
You know, we could literally talk to a wall for hours probably. Like if you just sat us alone with a wall, we'd probably be like, so anyway, wall, how's, you know, that's just the kind of people we are. And you know, there's people that are completely opposite of us, but you know, so, but yeah, I've been doing it for a while.
Now what got you to this? Were you doing any other broadcasting before?
Well, no, it's so funny that you were just talking about the canceled stuff because it just made me think about how I got like semi-canceled when I was on Vine, you know, because Vine is like where I got my start.
Right.
It was that 6-second app where you would do funny videos on there, and I was like the most popular person on there at one point, had the most followers, and like everyone was watching my videos. And at the time I was in like my early 20s and I was just doing what I thought was funny, and I wasn't trying to hurt anyone's feelings, but I would do different characters that were different races.
Right. And which is so not, you can't do that now.
You can't do that. And so like, cause I grew up watching SNL and I grew up watching, you know, Mad TV where white people would play all kinds of different races. And so to me, I thought, oh, that's normal. That's fine. Like if I want my character to be an Indian, I'm going to be an Indian. Or if I want my character to be Hispanic, I'm going to be Hispanic. So basically what happened was I started doing all these characters, and you know, this was right around the time when people started finding issues with it, you know, like back in the day, no one cared. But now it was just right when people started, you know, being like, that's racist. And to me, I was like, what? It's racist, but I'm playing a Hispanic person. I have to act Hispanic. And so for me, it was like so confusing. And I remember it was really sad for me at the time because people were saying, like, kept people calling me racist, and like, they were like, you know, that's not cool. You're a white girl. I'm not like technically fully white. I'm Italian, but whatever. White, I guess. My parents is like, my grandparents are from Italy on both sides, but yeah, I guess I'm a white, total just plain white girl. But
my wife is half Sicilian.
Yeah.
Just enough to kill me in the middle of the night.
Exactly. So, I mean, but to me, it was like, I never in my mind thought, you know, I'm going to try to hurt another race or depict them in a bad way. It was me just trying to be funny. And then all these people like attacked me and were like, fuck you. You're the worst. Like, and hated on me because of it. So it was really sad for me. That was like a really tough
Did you take your account down?
No, I left it because I was joking, and it wasn't me trying to be derogatory towards anyone. And it was like, it just blew my mind. And I think it was the first time in my life where I realized that you can do something with like good intentions. Like my intentions were to just be funny and make people laugh and have a good time.
Right.
And people can completely misconstrue that and take it like you're making fun of someone or hurting another, you know, person or whatever. And it just really made me so sad. And so then I left Vine. I just ended up, I had already, you know, had success on there, and it just became really negative. And so I left Vine and I just started doing my own stuff. I started acting and doing what I've always wanted to do.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, eventually the podcast and that kind of thing. So, but it was really hard. That was a really hard thing for me to go through because my intentions were so positive just to be funny. And then it was just like, everyone was like, you're racist. You're this, you're that. And you're like, what? Like, I'm not even trying. I don't get it, you know? So.
And then you can't say things like, well, my friends, and that's like the worst thing. There is nothing to get you out of it. Cause
you can't
say anything.
I've
been caught in it a few times. I've done things in my career that
yeah.
I want to set the Wayback Machine on because, I think most people have. They go, wow, I couldn't do that now, you know?
No, and if I knew ahead of time that I was going to hurt someone's feelings or offend someone, I would have never done it. You know, it's like, I just didn't know at the time. I was so young and naive, but that kind of stuff, like, people stick with you, you know what I mean? People are they try to, like, you know, hold it against you forever, which makes me sad because I feel like in this cancel culture, we need to normalize people learning from their mistakes and moving on. Right. I don't think we need to punish and completely exile people for life because
unless they meant, unless they did something truly destructive.
Exactly. Unless it was something that was done with an intention or, you know, of hurting someone or being predatory in a way, you know, like that's one thing. But I'm just saying, like, in terms of like being naive and just getting used to, you know, understanding what's a cultural sensitivity and what isn't, you know, it's like, I just feel like people are so, like, they're just so quick to hate people. They're so quick to
that's
just cut
what's
them,
wrong.
Cut
and
dry.
And it's wrong across the board. And it started about 10 years ago where everybody, like, any sarcasm used to be, sarcasm doesn't read well. So if you try to put something on Twitter or wherever you're putting anything and you're sarcastic in print, it just, it doesn't even, it's just mean. It doesn't come off
it doesn't
as
translate.
Sarcasm. Sometimes it can be done cleverly, like Stephen Colbert will do it cleverly, or, you know, Bill Maher's great at it, you know, certain people. But a lot of people try to joke, and it's usually just, it's just cruel intentions now. And it's a lot of people. I just block people because I can't, I'm not going to let that much negative in my life. I'm already, as we were talking before, self-loathing about things. I know my mistakes. What I admire about you is you talk freely about mental health and
of course,
and your anxiety and how you get through it. And that you were telling me that you had a really big panic attack just a couple of days ago.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing we have. And I think that's like the really sad part is that, you know, people behind the keyboard, they just want to, you know, jab you. And it's like, you're already dealing with your own shit and you're already dealing with your own demons. And, you know, that's why, like, I don't go online and bash anybody because it's like everyone's got their own shit going on. Everyone's dealing with their own stuff. And, like, you know, was I always like that? No, I've learned over the years, like, that's not cool because everyone is, you know, and everyone is experiencing life from their perspective, which is different from everyone else's perspective. Right. You know, we perceive ourselves in one way and the world in one way, and it's completely different to another person, the way they're perceiving us and the world. So it's like, you know, you can't, I don't know. I just think especially right now, everyone's dealing with a lot, and why add to that for people? You know what I mean?
Yep. You look at that movie, The Social Dilemma. Did you see that documentary?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We choose our own system for belief. So you could be standing next to someone and use Siri and go, okay, where did the coronavirus, how did it start? In a lab or in wet market or something that's upsetting to talk about? Or was it mainly China? Or where is the World Health Organization based? And I talked to somebody who did the same search I did, but using their different kind of questioning. And then everybody finds a source, and it could be from, you know, Jim's newspaper, and they'll believe it. It could be anything. And then people go, well, you can't believe the Wall Street Journal or New York Times or, you know, it's just very, I'd rather believe something that has a lot of credible Pulitzer Prize winning authors than just someone's opinion who's got a tractor.
Yeah.
But everybody deserves
Joe's online diary. Yeah.
Right.
It's hard these days, man. I mean, honestly, and I think a lot of people have become more in tune because of the pandemic and dealing with a lot of people for the first time dealing with depression or dealing with anxiety, you know, because of the pandemic, I think it's opened. And I personally had a bunch of people reach out to me that say, you know, I've never had anxiety before, or I've never had depression. And now all of a sudden, because of COVID and them experiencing this, you know, loss of family members or loss of friends or getting sick themselves, and having kind of that face-to-face look with mortality, I have so many people reaching out to me and going, wow, anxiety is really real and depression is really real. And so many people are experiencing it for the first time. And I think it's made us a lot more sensitive and a lot more understanding which is one of the good things to come out of it. I think a lot of people now, instead of jumping the gun and being mean to people, are starting to be a little bit more warm. And I only say
people
that
we know.
Well, I mean that, yeah, but that also, I mean, I'm on TikTok, even though I'm probably, you know, whatever. There's everyone, on, you know, I love TikTok. If you notice on there, there will be people that will put with disabilities or people with, you know, either physical deformities or, you know, mental disabilities or whatever will post on there. And I remember in the days of Vine, those people would be ridiculed and would be teased and would be, people would be mean to them. But I notice on TikTok a totally different community. And I don't know if it's just my TikTok. It can't just
it
be mine.
It is your algorithms. It's what you
it's
watch.
It's my algorithm,
because
maybe.
Because
you
could choose to watch a bunch of 15-year-olds' TikToks. And,
right.
And if you, they know what you want to watch, which is pretty brilliant, which is also scary.
Yeah, they do. They do cater to you. But I'm saying in terms of the comments, it's interesting because I will look and, you know, if I see someone on there who, you know, has a deformity or something like that, and I'm like, oh, great, these people are going to be so mean to them. And I go to the comments and people are actually so nice.
I noticed
that.
So
that makes
that
me
too.
Really help. That makes me really happy and really hopeful for our future.
I agree, because Twitter can be an evil fest if you put something out there they don't like.
And YouTube and all those places.
Oh, YouTube,
but I've found
YouTube's got, they just
YouTube's
sit
there gnarly.
Wait to hate is their motto.
Yeah, wait to hate. But I mean, I'm scrolling through TikTok and I like let out a sigh of relief. Like, thank God people are starting to finally get in touch with their humanity and their you know, their soul. That they're not going to go and berate this poor person that had no choice to be born this way and is just trying to have a fun time on the app. You know what I mean?
It gives me a lot of, I get very inspired when I see people.
I do too. And I get a lot of hope. And I'm like, if this is the younger generation that's being kind like this, I am here for it. Like the bullying needs to just be done forever. I just think bullying is so... It's just like, ugh, like there's really, it just, I personally, when I see someone bully someone, instead of thinking that that person is cool or whatever, the first thought that comes to my head is, what are they struggling with? Because
who didn't
no
love
one,
them?
Who didn't love
who,
them?
Who hit
didn't,
them and yelled at them?
Who, how sad are they in their life?
But
because
they don't know
no one.
Because a bully, no. I don't think can process that evil that they're summoning in themselves. Cause I can't think that if they weren't treated differently, that they wouldn't be like, were you bullied ever in school or?
Oh
home?
My God, Bob, I was destroyed in school. It was horrible. Okay. So when I was in 7th grade, I was one of the first girls to get boobs, and I have still to this day,
I was too. Same experience.
Hilarious. I grew really big breasts. I still have really, really large breasts that everyone says are fake, but they're real. And I would get, I'm thinking actually about getting a reduction because they're just painful. It's not fun. It's not like I'm like, yay.
I
boobs.
Know a guy.
It's like, it's the worst. Yeah. So I grew boobs really dead. I grew boobs really quickly in 7th grade and none of the other girls had them yet. And I was really thin. And all these girls decided to get together because guys started liking me and the older classmen started liking me. And so all these girls got together and they were like, let's spread a rumor that Britney got breast implants in 7th grade.
Oh man.
And so they went to get, they all got together, this group of mean girls, and they went and told everybody, Britney got breast implants. Tell everybody Britney got breast implants. And so they came up with this term for me called plastic. So they would walk by me and go, Hey, plastic, like they would call me plastic. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? I come from like a middle-class family. You think my family would buy me fucking breast implants? Like it was so.
You weren't even denying it. You were like,
I was like,
we can't afford them.
I was like, let's think about the financial aspect of it. Do y'all know how much breast implants cost, especially then?
You're going to be paying off your college loans. You can't.
Right? I was like, are you fucking, you kidding me? Like, it's just, it was so sad and people were so mean to me and I had one girlfriend and that's it. And I had a really depressing high school experience. I hated it. I hated high school. I probably went to like 6 weeks of my senior year And they still let me graduate because I did, they would send my work home for me and I did really well. And, but I was bullied hard. Like, I mean, girls were just mean as shit. And it's so funny because then when I moved to LA and I didn't have success in LA till about 10 years after, I moved to LA right after high school because I was in theater and that kind of thing in high school and I wanted to be an actress. And I moved to LA at 17 and I went to the Comedy Store and the Improv and I started doing open mics, just kind of how everybody starts, right?
Right.
And that's where I met like Gerard Carmichael and Esther Pavitsky and... Gerard used to walk my dogs when I had to work and like we were all friends and it's so funny. That's a whole nother story. But then it's like funny to watch all your friends get really successful, right?
Yeah.
Like you were saying on my podcast.
Yeah.
And then so it wasn't until like years later that I had any success, but as soon as I did, all those mean girls from high school hit me up on like Facebook and like Instagram and were like, hey, remember me? Like, so proud of you. I'm like, you fucking bitch. I never forget. You know what I mean?
Like, well, it's like those movies that you watch that show everybody
so funny.
Who basically, as they get older, only think about high school. Wasn't that great in high school? And they never, and they had their babies and they got married and, or not in that order. And they just look down on you if you didn't subscribe to their formula of what I think sometimes is not fun for them. They're not really as happy. They're little Stepford. Some people are.
Oh, my God. High school was the worst. I can honestly say the worst time of my entire life. And it went by so slowly and I could not wait to get the fuck out.
Same,
and I was like, this is toxic.
I was in elementary school. As I got into junior high, I was in Norfolk, Virginia. And I got a lot of anti-Semitism, and they would call me
really
a lot, and people threw rocks at my head, and they also called me Saget the Faggot, which, of course, is incredibly original and hard to think of. It's so funny that I got well-known enough where only, like, 13-year-old bully boys on Twitter will do it, because it's original thought for them, you know, but it's like... Okay. I mean, there's also sag ass, sag balls. I could give you more if you want to make fun of me more. I can help you. But it was really bad. And I moved, I told you on your podcast, I moved in the middle of ninth grade from Virginia to California and then back from California to Philadelphia where I was born between 11th and 12th. So I didn't have any core
stability.
Group, but I hear from those people. And the people that were mean to me, one kid in particular, I had a fight in sixth grade because he called me a dirty Jew. And I had a fight at the baseball diamond at sixth grade. And I'll never forget it. And I don't say his name on here because he knows who he is. If he's alive, I mean, he might not be alive. He probably joined one of these crazy groups that we hear about now.
Oh,
and
no.
Is, you know, he's going to storm some building.
That's so horrible.
It's bad. So people that are getting bullied out there have to know that there's light at the end of the tunnel.
And I'd like to think that hopefully, even though, you know, I know some of my friends' kids are in their, you know, they're like in their teens and they tell me it's still really bad in terms of, you know, especially now with social media. I mean, when we were growing up, we didn't have social media. So we were kind of lucky in a sense that if we were bullied at school, we got to go home and at least that's where it stopped, you know?
Right.
Now these kids, it's so unrelenting. You know what I mean?
That's
it's like
an
they're
amazing
bullied.
Point. And I actually never thought of that. Cause when I went home, I got to tell my mom about it. My dad was too tired to tell. But now these kids go home.
Now it's like then they just go online and there's the asshole again being like, hey, loser, like on their DMs or making fun of their picture or, you know, whatever. It's like it doesn't stop for them, which is so sad for me. I just think it's so sad. So a lot of parents of a lot of my friends for their kids don't allow them to even have social media just to stay away from that aspect. But then the kids tell me that they also get bullied for that because it's like then they're so out of the loop, you know what I mean, when all their friends have Instagram and they don't. So it's just kind of like that's the dark side, I think, of social media is that, you know, it doesn't, there's no rest.
No,
you know?
And
there's
it doesn't
no
give us
break.
Rest. And it spreads
no,
a lot
we
of
get
lies.
No rest.
And then
people,
just fighting the lies is draining everything we shouldn't be draining. We're not living our lives. We're busy batting off all the garbage.
Yeah, I mean, I've pretty much gotten to the point where I try to say, like, I know who I am. I know my heart, you know, I know where I come from. So if someone wants to say something about me, I've learned to not take things personally from people I'm not personal with because they don't know me. You know what I mean? Like, how can I take it personally? They don't know me. They've never spoken to me. So I don't take it personally.
And if it's someone that's close to you, a real close family member or a real close friend, you can, because you've done work on yourself, I know, because we talk. And when you do, when you have therapy and you understand yourself more, you're able to say, this really upset me.
Yeah.
And then you either resolve it or you take a break or that person just drifts away in a way. But social media, you don't owe a person an argument.
It's not worth your time, honestly. And I told Tommy this too, because, you know, he is so political and he gets a lot of hate with that because he's so outspoken about it. And I, you know, it's, and he'll get angry or whatever. And, you know, I just tell him, like, who cares? Like, you're living this amazing life. You know who you are. You know your heart. Like, why let anything some stranger says bother you? And it takes a while to get to that place. You know what I mean?
It took me a long time. Sometimes it still gets to me.
Yeah. It depends. I mean, you're human. Of course. You're a human being, you know? So it's like we have feelings and we're so sensitive, but not to be like a total weirdo, but I'm very into like spirituality and, you know, that's just our ego. You know, our soul has nothing to do with that. Our soul has nothing no ego.
And the people that are doing it are pure id. So
yeah, they don't, look they're that not, up. They're not in touch with that level of themselves yet to go, you know, any negative energy that I'm creating is just creating more negative energy in my life too. You know, so it's, you know, people don't realize that, I think, until they really do a lot of self work.
And I don't know if people do or want to or deal with it and they think it's all a bunch of bullshit, but I wish it for them. I wish it for people that are maybe listening right now that are cruel to some other people that are maybe listening because they're hoping I'll, you know, say fuck. And so that's why they're listening. They just want to hear a curse word, you know, for no reason. But I hope that kind of a person who's not being nice to someone or choosing the low road somehow finds, I don't know, some self-reflection, some empathy of what would it be like? How can that person that I don't like or that I'm making fun of be so different from me and I just don't like them automatically? Can I try to be a better person? We're at a time right now where it feels like that's impossible from people that are doing that, berating people that they could.
I believe like some people won't even reach that level of self-reflection until they're on their deathbed. Cause I think that's when you sort of get to the point in your life where you really go through all your decisions and go through all your emotions. And I mean, I really am into like, obviously, like I said, the spirituality research, and there's, you've talked to a lot of people who have, you know, either people who have died and come back or people that have had near death experiences and things like that. And those are the kinds of situations where people finally realize like the little petty arguments, the hating on people, the really small stuff, it doesn't matter in the big picture.
It means nothing.
It means zero.
Have you been in a room with someone? I have, that is dying. Have you been in hospice rooms before?
It's dark. It's dark, but it's also beautiful in a way. Yeah. It depends. Yeah. So yeah, I have. I've watched my grandmother's brother die. I've watched my grandmother right before she died. And yeah, who have you been in the room with?
Two sisters, one from a brain aneurysm who had a lot of other difficult mental health issues in her life. And she was so beautiful and wonderful at 34. And then another one at 47 from scleroderma, which is hardening of the skin. And
I didn't know that could kill you.
Yeah, it kills. It can be very fatal.
Oh my God.
I'm a part of the Scleroderma Research Foundation where we've raised $50 million in the past 30 years that goes to research. But my sister Gay that had it died at 47, and that was a painful death. That wasn't, and she was a good person. That was the one who was a school teacher up
teacher, yeah.
in Upper Bucks County. And I hear from people on Twitter or Facebook, they'll say, your sister was my teacher and she was the best teacher I ever had. Aww. That's when social media is a nice thing. That's when it's a gift. But I was in her room and she was begging me to help her. So she was at, some people as they're going out are fear-based about their death. And so hers was just, you know, they just
awful.
Gave her morphine so she could get out. She didn't get resolution. But I think some of the people that are have been very cruel to people or have done wrong things, some, whether they're religious for reasons or whatever, look for redemption. But I think there's also a lot that are at that point maybe really angry or maybe really fearful because they didn't never resolved it. They never came to terms with what happened in their life.
No, it's hard.
My mom was amazing. That was, my mom was literally like being in the room with Gandhi, except she had a top on because he always had a, he was topless. But she
did she talk to anyone in the room? Because that happened with my grandmother started talking to her sister and her mom.
My mom was loose until the day, moment she passed. My mother would have people visit her. John Stamos and Dave Coulier from Full House went to visit her, and she put makeup on. She hadn't had food for 2 weeks, and she put makeup on. I said, you're not going to sleep with him. You're just going to say hi to him. And she, everybody that saw her, she had like a halo around her. She would tell everyone, you're going to be okay. Everything's good. She would tell everyone that they're going to be okay.
Was she religious?
No, because she lost 4 children totally, 2 more before I was born. And so she was strong, and she made her own religion. I mean, I was raised Jewish, but she just got to a really high place, and I'd never seen that before. My friends were visiting, crying as they came out of the room, and they said, I've never seen that before.
And well, how did she eventually pass? Did she just go to sleep?
Yeah, she went. I called at 5:30 in the morning. I called the hospital, and the nurse said, "Oh, we just gave her a bath, and they had started to medicate her more because she was a little bit uncomfortable. She had stopped eating 3 weeks before. It took 3 weeks with no food or water, but they would give her ice chips so she'd be able to talk." And she just wanted it to go because she had, her body was full of cancer and didn't want to go through the chemo. And she was 89. I would have probably gone through it, but maybe I wouldn't have. You never know if it's you.
She was tired.
She was very tired. She lost my dad like 10 years earlier. And she was just a lot of love. People could learn from how she went out. It was the highest she'd, besides the morphine, it was the highest of a being.
Were you with her the moment that she passed?
No, I was saying, I'm sorry, I didn't finish because I always cut myself off. I called and the nurse gave her a bath and then came back to the phone and she had me on hold for like 10 minutes. And I just stayed on hold and then she said she just passed. So I was on the phone with her. So it was really weird because I don't normally call unless people that have someone in the hospital. You're up all hours, you know. When I've had stuff happen with people I'm very close to, I'll call at 2 a.m., 4 a.m. It doesn't matter. There's no time. So, you know, we're going to take a quick break because we're really having such a happy, laughing time.
I'm sorry. I always tend to bring out like the depressing
I like it.
Side of people, but well, yeah, I love real. I like talking about real stuff. I do. I mean, I have a funny side, obviously, because we're dark.
Right.
But I love talking about real stuff and I love getting to like the humanity of people. You know what I mean? So
me too.
Yeah.
When we come back, we're going to go darker.
Okay.
I'm going to sacrifice a chicken. All right. We're back. And
we're back. I want to ask you a question.
Go ahead.
Are you scared of dying?
No. How do you like that?
0%.
0%.
Tell me why, because I'm very scared.
I don't want to die. I got a lot to do. I mean, I got a big third act coming up.
Yeah?
Yeah. So I've got a lot going on as far as you look at life, you know?
Right.
Or second act if I live to 130. But I've been around it a lot, and I don't know. I have very... I too, am not religious, but I do have a spiritual bent to me. And I don't think when you die, you die. I don't know what else happens. In my 20s, that was all, reincarnation. And I went for past life therapy and all kinds of woo-woo stuff. And where do you stand on that?
I've talked to a lot of different people, and I definitely think there is something else. Obviously in physics, even if you're a scientist, you'll know this, that energy can't be destroyed no matter what. So we're made of energy.
I hope some people's can.
Yeah, well, apparently not. In no way, it actually just changes form. So, when you pass on, your body may physically die, but I think your soul is made of so much energy that I think we move on to another plane. And I've had a medium.
I agree.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, it's okay. I had a medium on my podcast, and she told me that, she talks to the dead all the time. And so I asked her what happens when we die. And she broke it down for me like this and said, you die, your soul leaves your body, you go to heaven, and in heaven, you get to review your life and see what you did wrong, what you did right, if you learned all of the lessons that you were supposed to learn. And if you did not learn all the lessons you were supposed to learn, then you are sent back to Earth. You choose your life. Everyone has chosen their life. You've chose this life. I've chose this life. And you choose it according to lessons that you need to fulfill your soul. And so if you haven't fulfilled your soul, you go back to Earth, reincarnation, you come back. That's why you hear like a lot of kids going, I was a pilot. My plane was gunned down, because as a child, the memories haven't been completely erased. But as part of your soul contract, you agree with your memory getting erased. You agree with starting over so that you can learn from these experiences that you need to learn to fulfill your soul. Once you fulfill all of your all of your soul contracts and you fulfill everything you need to learn as a soul, then you move up to the next step, which is where you become like a spirit guide. And so that's when people who had known you in previous lives or whatever, when they pass away, you're able to greet people and help them when they get to heaven. And then you apparently do that for a while. And then once you're finished with that, doing that for how time exists,
so
in this place,
there is no time.
Right. Eventually you become an angel. So it's like a really long, drawn out period. From what she told me is that the spirits have told her that, it's a lot of people. People end up going back to Earth hundreds of times because they're not learning the lessons that they need to learn. And so people that are in particularly difficult situations will go like, I would never choose this life. But yes, your soul did choose that life because apparently you needed to learn whatever happened to you in that trouble. Even if it was trauma, whether it was trauma or abuse, whatever, your soul chose that for you to grow in a certain way. It's so interesting.
And I believe some of it, in my 20s, I believed only that. Mm-hmm. That was where I went for my, I'd gone to Israel years ago with my ex-in-laws and my ex-wife, and we were young. And I spent more time researching where Jesus was from than I did equal time. I went through all, I went to the Wailing Wall, I did all, and then I wanted to go see the Dome of the Rock to see where, that's Muslim oriented, and it's where Muhammad ascended to heaven on the same spot where Abraham supposedly was going to slay Isaac, his son, on the same spot where Raiders of the Lost Ark found the covenant. So there's all these, it was this energy force on this spot which existed. But I went through all these different phases, and I think what this medium that you were talking to, and I'm sure she did it well, she's medium well, but I think what she is saying is comforting because it's linear. It really is, and I'm not judging it at all, but I'm saying it gives you a way in this tangible world to go, okay, this is what happens. And I've been in when my sister Gay died, and I did a TV movie about it called For Hope that Dana Delaney portrayed her, basically. And I put it in the movie. I felt her soul leave her. I felt it. I looked at her. I saw her last breath. And there was a gust of air go past my head. And the people in the room felt it. It existed. It happened. I said, she's gone. And my mother and my father and my nephew went, yes. I said, did you feel that? And they all were like, they were a little thrown because it was the soul leaving the body. It's also the miracle of birth does the same thing. If you're in a room when a baby's born, it's like, what the hell?
Did you feel that with your children too?
Well, they all had the cords around their heads.
They
had traumatic births. The first one, well, we don't have to get into it because it was a lot. And they were all brilliant and complicated and beautiful and wonderful. But I think what the medium is saying to you, my interpretation, because there is no answer. I mean, it's only what we feel, what feels right. Tony Soprano gets shot and you cut to black. There's nothing, you know. And a lot of people I know believes there's nothing, you know, it's over.
That's what Tommy kind of thinks, which makes me really sad.
Well, Bill Maher thinks that. I mean, and not to say that they're the end all, but a lot of people believe that because they don't want to think past it. But you know what? I think what you believe might be what you get. And if you want to cut to black and not deal, maybe that's what you got. And if you want angels, because that's been in pretty much everybody's folklore and religion and, you know, every faith has them in it somewhere, whether they have an elephant head or in 12 arms or whether they are angels and all
yeah.
the paintings and all the angels around the manger and all the everything. Judaism has a lot of angels in it, you know, and that's, I don't know, but that's how we represent beauty and birth. And death is like it. But that whole thing you were saying about, you know, you review your whole life, that's a theme that's happened. I mean, Albert Brooks made a movie called Defending Your Life years ago. It was really interesting. And Meryl Streep was in it. And it was like looking at your life. But it could happen in a nanosecond. It could happen.
Yeah.
It might feel like an eternity, but it might be... Because your dream sometime, you think it's been 2 hours, but it's...
Been 5 minutes.
Not even. I don't know. I don't know nothing. You know, I just know that I agree that there's too much energy in you for it to be gone when the body doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense to me. I mean, I literally like to think of us essentially, this is a banana peel and it's a shell.
So you know, we slip on it when we die?
We are just, it's just a holder. This is it. This is just a container for what we really are. And I don't know about you, but I have really vivid dreams. And in my dreams, I go a lot of crazy places that I've never been or never seen. And that leads me to believe that there's a lot more because sometimes almost every single night I have these really vivid dreams where I'm visiting hotels and places of the world that I've never been. And I remember them when I wake up and I feel like it's places I've been before, but I haven't. And it's so strange. And I'm like, this is just me traveling between, and I know this sounds very woo-woo, but I genuinely believe it's me traveling between dimensions and lives that I've had and things that I've experienced. Because I do wake up exhausted a lot, like, oof, I went back there or I went back, you know, but it's always familiar, you know?
Well, congrats on having epic dreams. Some people just think their teeth are coming out.
I mean, I've had those dreams too, but I tend to have the dreams are just beyond. They're just, and I don't love it because I wake up tired a lot because it's like in my dream, I'm traveling. I'm not resting. No, I'll be like in, all of a sudden I'll be in like, for instance, the other night I was in Japan in a hotel and I had my dog that had gotten killed a few years ago with me and Nina, who's with me now, and they were there and I was just going up and down the elevator trying to figure something out and then trying to watch them, making sure nothing happened to them. And it was really stressful, but I remember in my dream feeling like I was there before, going, okay, yeah, I've been to this place before. I knew what to do. I knew where the rooms were. I knew all the buttons. And I have dreams a lot like that almost every single night, you know, going to a new place that, you know, I'm there and I'm going, oh, I'm here again sometimes, you know, where it's somewhere that's bad or it's strange.
Well,
you're
plugged in. I mean, I look at that as being connected because anybody, I don't care how you look at it. We're all connected. Even these people that we look at and go, oh my God, how can they think that? How can they be that? We're still connected. It's all part of this. We're fighting with ourselves right now. That's where the world is at.
And that's the difference between my husband and I. Is my husband goes to sleep and he sees nothing.
My
and
wife
he doesn't
does
go
that.
Anywhere.
Once in a while, she'll wake up and tell me a dream, which I love. But sometimes a couple of weeks ago, I had a dream that I was having a stroke, and I couldn't get up, and I was going in bed next to her. Stroke.
No.
And I wasn't on the rowing team, you know? It was bad. And
she
woke me up, and my whole left side, I had slept on it, and I literally went, oh, my God,
numb.
Is this real? And it wasn't, but I dreamt. That's a fear. That's what you definitely don't want, and I have people I love that have had them. And, you know, it's my heart always goes out to people that they can't operate in their body like we can. How fortunate.
Yeah.
And then how amazing they are. And we were talking about that a little bit.
Yeah. It's incredible. I mean, there's a girl that I had my brain scanned at the Amen Clinic. I don't know if you know about the Amen Clinic.
No.
Dr. Daniel Amen started this clinic where they can scan your brain and kind of see like the activity of your brain and decipher, you know, where the ADHD is, depression, anxiety. They can physically like see it in your brain.
Is that brain waves?
It's not waves. It's actually like, it's called a SPECT scan, and they can see your brain on the scan, and it lights up in different areas depending on like what, you know, what you're dealing with. And there's depression lit up in a certain area and that kind of thing and whatnot. But there's a girl that works for him, this really beautiful girl named Natalie. And she's like this really pretty girl with blonde hair, and she's wheelchair bound, and she can't walk because when she was 17, she went skiing and she got hurt and got paralyzed. And so she is the most positive, happy, like just her energy is so unreal, especially for someone who used to be able to walk, you know, and is this beautiful girl and then had an accident at 17 skiing and lost her ability to walk. And she doesn't let it dampen her. She is just this insane light. And you're like, wow. Wow. I could learn from someone like that. She doesn't sit there and go like, why me? Or like, you know, sit there all depressed. Like, I can't walk. I used to be able to walk, and like, who's going to, you know, want me now kind of thing. Like, you know, cause that's where like my fucked up brain would go. But she is like this beautiful spirit. Her soul is so bright. She met like a really handsome guy who fell in love with her. They get married. Like, she's engaged. She's just like, it's just really inspiring, you know, because
I just did this thing. Jake Tapper did something for Home for the Troops and is building homes for the troops. And so he asked, would I do some Zoom calls with people that gave money?
Right.
So I did a couple Zoom calls. I just did one today with a lovely lady and her, I guess her nanny, but it's really her best friend, helper person. And they both have so many challenges, and she's brilliant. She's a Washington lawyer. She's incredibly stressed. She's got too much in her mind. She's got two grown children with some definite impediments that are big that she's dealing with. And the nanny helps her, and then the person helps her with that. And I loved talking to them so much. It just made me feel like, you know, I guess I say for the grace of God, but you know, that's an expression. But then I talked to another guy for the same cause who gave money, and he was wheelchair bound, and he was since he was a little kid. And he was so incredibly positive, same as you're saying this young lady is. And he was just like, I'm just a big fan of your work. And I was like, wow, when I'm where you're at, you'll come to my show and I'll comp you in and I'll come backstage and we'll be able to take a picture again. A selfie will happen, you know. And It was just, he was just so smart, just a smart person who makes a good living. He supports his parents and he does it online. He does it with his IT world.
Wow.
But you look at Stephen Hawking, for God's sakes. You know,
oh, my God, I know.
You don't look at him now. I mean, it's not as attractive.
Right. But he really, I mean, there's, and that's the interesting thing is you wonder in the bigger picture, like, you know, did God do these things to these people because they were there to inspire others, or he knew that they would rise above. That was part of their soul. You know, I don't know. I wonder, you know.
Or is it a part of God in us that, as you're saying, you choose, your soul chooses what I need to learn.
Right.
It's whatever works, whatever makes sense for someone to give them peace through life and through the whole trajectory of it.
Because we'll truly never know till we die.
I don't know if you'll know when you do. I mean, if you're saying we got to come back, then we got to figure more out. I mean, not being afraid of death is a weird thing. And it's helped me. Took me years. I'm 65 almost. So it took me most of my life. And I think it came from being around people that died. And also appreciating life and the moments of it more, because I take a lot for granted. I think I have. Do you have fear of death?
Always. That's my biggest fear. That's all my panic attacks. That's my only fear is death. And it's because I love my life so much. I love my life. And I finally love my life. And I didn't love my life when I was younger. And I love my life so much now. And I'm like, I don't ever want to lose it.
Well, don't.
You know?
Then you're not. I mean, you're not.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got.
I just get scared.
You're so
young.
You have so much.
But I worry, like, you know, every time we get on a plane or a helicopter or, you know, my husband likes to go to exotic places that don't have hospitals nearby. And my brain always goes to, my husband calls me WCS, worst case scenario, because I'll think of, like, what if a spider crawls in my tent and bites my asshole and then I die of, you know, whatever. Like, I think of the worst stuff, or, like, you know, we get in a helicopter and I'm like, this is it. Like, we're going
to
die.
Helicopter's like, much less scary to me than a spider biting my asshole.
Yeah, but I just get scared of everything. And then the scarier part is that when I do have my panic attacks, you know, when I have them here, our hospital is 5 minutes down the street. When I have them in the middle of the rainforest in Costa Rica, that's not fun, because I'm like, paramedics to get to me if it does get serious is a lot further.
Do you go camping to that degree?
No, but my husband likes to go to, like, sort of off the beaten path places. Like, even if we go stay in, like, somewhere in Mexico, he likes to stay in, like, weird places that are really remote. And so that triggers my anxiety, because when I do have a panic attack, like I told you on my podcast, my heart rate goes up to 160. My blood pressure will be, you know, 140 over 90. It'll get crazy. And then my little device that I have to check it will tell me I'm in a hypertensive crisis. And then I always get nervous because I never know. I take a beta blocker and I always take, like, a low dose to start, but sometimes that doesn't work. And then I'm like, how much more do I take? How much less do I take? And then I get scared, like, I'm going to overdose myself by accident, you know. And,
well, that's,
like,
good. At least you won't do that. I mean.
Yeah. I mean, I just get worried. And then it's like, so, you know, I just.
It feeds itself.
It feeds itself.
You're adding fuel to the fire.
Right. And I wish I try to do, like, deep breathing. Like, during the day, I'm okay, because I take, like, this CBD that has ashwagandha in it. And it's really helped me a lot. So
I
during
went out
the day,
with her.
Hilarious. During the day when I take it, I feel calm. I can calm myself down. But in the middle of sleeping is usually when, like I told you, they get me. Is like, I'll wake up out of my sleep and I'll be already in a panic attack. And so,
have you
talked
to
it
your
down.
Therapist about the death fear? Because that sounds like the key to the kingdom for you.
Yeah, we're working on it. I mean, the whole thing we're working on is for me learning to let go of control, because I have no control.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
None of us have it.
When it's my time, it's going to be my time, whether in Cabo or whether I'm, you know, in Canada or on a plane or in an ocean or, you know, like it's going to be my time.
I like the spider asshole bite. I think
the spider asshole bite. It's going to be my time.
Right.
And so I need to just accept that. And so, you know, over the pandemic, my fear started turning into agoraphobia, which I struggled really hard with leaving the house because we started staying home so much in the pandemic that when it became time to go to the grocery store or go to the gas station or go wherever, I would start getting triggered. I would be in the grocery store and I'd see like all the fluorescent lights and I'd start to get dizzy and feel out of body and right. get sweaty and my heart would start beating fast.
That's
and
so scary.
It's the worst.
You know, you're and not start alone not in this.
No, I know that a lot of people have disassociation and I do that when I'm stressed. And so I started panicking and was like, oh my God, now I can't even leave my house. Like I used to be able to leave my house. And so now I've been doing what's called exposure therapy, where like a couple times a week I have to get in my car and I have to go somewhere. I have to drive in traffic. I have to sit in traffic and tell myself I'm going to be fine, because another trigger was that I'm going to have a panic attack in traffic and then not be able to take my medicine because it kind of knocks you out. And then I'm going to be stuck and no one's going to be able to help me because I'm in the middle of traffic. And, you know, my brain just goes. And so I put myself through this every week. I go sit in traffic or drive to a friend's house and drive back or, you know, just get out.
You don't get in the car when you're in a state of panic, do you? Because that would be dangerous for you to drive.
No, no, no. It's not, it doesn't, you know, but I have been in the car in a state of panic.
Being in the car is what gives me a state of panic.
It gives me anxiety. Sometimes when I'm driving, because I think too much, I start thinking, oh my God, how weird is it that I'm this person with this brain with a heart beating in my chest and I'm driving this machine and all these other people are driving these machines, and like I start overthinking life. That's like my whole problem is overthinking life.
Yeah, you're not alone.
No, I know that. And so I start to think about how weird that is and like there's people driving next to me and like what is their life like, and I start getting way in my head about it. And then I get spiral into a panic attack because then I start like disassociating. Is this all real? Blah, 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 blah. But the whole thing with that to get over it is exposure therapy. So I just have to force myself, you know, out of my comfort zone.
Some people are okay. You know, this pandemic, you know, some people do just the opposite. You know, that's why you see after the Super Bowl in Tampa, everybody's got no masks on and they're out screaming in the street like, you know, like Tarzan is yelling at the trees.
But super spreaders just like don't care.
My God, that was a super
ain't
spreader.
No virus gonna get me.
Like, I know, we always really, do dude? The accent. It's a real problem because
I know
it is a it's a South Park episode. It feels
it's
like
so insane.
It really does.
I mean, it's like they're not making up the numbers, guys. Like, I mean, I've even in the past few weeks have just known so many people. I mean, friends, parents, friends, cousins who have all died. Friends who have gotten it, close friends who have gotten it and have said this thing is fucking gnarly. I mean, I have friends who are super tough that don't, you know, they could drink like a sailor, and they got the coronavirus and they were like, I have never been so sick in my entire life. It's the scariest thing ever. I understand why old people don't make it through, you know? So I've had too many personal close people experience it and tell me how, and they sound horrible, and they're like, you know, so I don't know. I guess maybe those people just don't know enough people with it or haven't seen it up close enough.
No, they haven't. There are people also in wide open spaces. It's just not as prevalent. They're not, our hospitals don't have. We were in LA up to capacity. I mean, it was.
Yeah.
You know, we're gonna take one more break because.
Okay.
Why not? So here's one
more. Okay.
It'll be nice. It'll be a grooming product or a mattress.
Love that.
How can we, I feel like wanting to help you. I feel like wanting to, I don't know, it'd be so great for you to get to a place of just acceptance of this is who I am. When the synapses fire and your mind is going all over the place, it's like, it'd be so nice. And I'm talking to myself too, you know, because here I am at 1 a.m. going, oh, I got to get up at 6. What am I doing?
I mean, I've been doing so much work on it, and this has been my fear for as soon as I started enjoying my life, it became my fear. So, right. I mean, I've seen myself get better with it, and I've actually just recently, like I said, doing the EMDR therapy, I'm starting to get to a place where I'm becoming more accepting, and where I'm going, what will be, and as I find my religion and spirituality more within myself and talk to God, whoever God may be, I get more cozy and go, okay, like, it's okay. I'm not alone. And I know in my heart of hearts that I'm not alone. Like, I feel God, I feel a presence of God, and I don't know what, like I said, I'm not putting a label on God, but I feel in my heart of hearts that there's a presence. There's something that is looking out for me, you know?
Does that help you be less agoraphobic when you realize you're part of all those people in their cars? On the freeway with all different beliefs, all different religions, mad at the other people in the other cars if they knew them. Some of them are listening to CNN radio, Fox News radio, and people couldn't believe all different things. But does this contact with feeling God within yourself, that's why people turn to prayer and turn to religion, right?
Yeah. And I've had it since I was little, and I just know, I just have this deep connection, and I have this deep connection so much that so when I do something that's not nice, or I know that I'm doing something that's not nice, it physically hurts me, you know, like when I am fighting with my husband or something, and my fighting brain goes, say this, you know? And I'll say something really with daggers. And in my heart, I'll go, oof.
I know. My brain goes, don't hit send. You know?
Yeah.
And it's like, don't. And then don't, I'm like, say that.
And so now I don't do these. I don't, you know, I've only maybe said one really horrible thing to him our whole relationship. We've been together 5 years. And I just learned how to stop myself now before, you know, because my heart, I feel it. And I know that that's God. Because what is a conscience? What is that? Like, to have a feeling that something is so bad and awful.
It's
a soul.
It's
a soul.
But over me here, I've got Jiminy Cricket. I've got a couple.
Yes.
I have a bunch of Jiminy Crickets because Pinocchio was my favorite Disney movie because it was about honesty.
A kid with a big nose. Lying. Oh, okay.
And what happens to you when you lie? Your nose grows.
Right, right.
And Jiminy is his conscience, which is how fucking brilliant is that?
Yeah.
What a message to get to me as a 9-year-old boy seeing this classic Disney movie about lying and what it turns you into, which is a jackass.
Yeah.
So here we are in a society where it's full of lies and based on non-truths, no matter what side you're coming from. I hate saying sides because it's not an athletic event, but it is. We're in World Federation Wrestling, it feels like, not politics. It's but it's the conscience that we need to have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, and the crazy thing to me is that some people don't have a conscience, and that's very scary to me. And I've met some of those people, and yes.
I think they do. I mean, I've known people.
No, some people do not, and I think that it is either mental disorder that they don't have it, they didn't develop properly to have it, or that they are just a dark being. Like, I've met people who have energy was so dark that I was like, oof. Like, they might have had a conscience at one point, and they just completely disregarded it, and that soul has, that goodness has left them completely.
I met a guy, I got exposed to that obviously as a kid when I was bullied by people. And that must have been descended upon him from his brothers or father or lack of. And there was a guy when I started playing comedy clubs, and I was in Virginia Beach, and this guy was part owner of a comedy club, I think. I don't remember what his connection was, but he was doing a whole lot of coke, and he was just evil. And he was like, I was in Nam, fuck it all. And it's like, that's how he dealt with the horrors and the PTSD, was doing drugs and not believing in anything. And then I was only 23. I ended up at his, wherever he lived. And he, like, the tree that was in his place, he ripped it apart, a living tree. And I went, wow, that's symbolic of how dark this non-human
person is. Yeah.
And that's what we got to help. I don't know how you do it, but
You know, honestly, I think, and I know this is going to sound again really weird, is that there are demons here. I don't think that there are, I don't think we're all genuinely people. I think some people are taken over by really bad, evil.
But is that
evil,
a conspiracy theorist? Because you hear that from people that are saying that, you know, actors drink Satan's blood, you know, baby blood.
I mean, I don't know how far it goes in terms of, you know, whether they were, like, born human or not, but I do believe that, like, there is evil presence and that it can take over people and, you know, they're still a person, but I think that these evil entities can attach themselves to people and grow and really control what these people do. I mean, I really genuinely believe that.
It is like a cancer and a virus, and it's, yeah, and it's reminiscent of things like Hitler, and people hate.
Yeah, just like there's, just like there, yeah, just like there's light, there's dark. There is. There's always going to be the dark too. I mean, I know it sounds like I said, I know it makes me sound like a weirdo, but I feel it, and I've looked in people's eyes at times where they were really, really off their kilter, and you know they looked black. Their eyes, like I was like, ooh, like yeah, it's scary. You can see it,
and we're watching it on the news. We're looking at it,
yeah.
And people that are also in denial over their evility, which is not a word.
No, but we can make it one.
So we know each other now.
Yeah.
So now, what can we do that you're going to continue the EM.
DR, yeah, yeah, EMDR. EMDR, yeah, I do that. I do regular therapy.
Do you meditate?
I try to meditate. I'm not great at it, but I try. I have a psychiatrist. I have a psychologist. I'm like very, very proactive when it comes to my mental
lucky
health.
You're able.
I am
because
there
are people
lucky,
that can't
yeah.
deal with the issues that you have, and they've had God knows what's happened, post-traumatic stress to
yeah.
them. Mm-hmm. So it's you're very inspiring that you're aware of it because this could have not been your path.
No, I literally could have let the darkness take hold, but I didn't. And I followed the light always. I mean, even though I've done things in my life I'm not proud of, I've said things I'm not proud of.
Yeah, but I'll double down on that. I mean,
but for the most part, I've tried to be a really good person. And I think that following that journey has been made me, you know, be able to have a successful life because I've always tried, no matter what, to find the light in any situation, you know? And I think the more I become in tune with my, like, I feel like I'm such an empath and I'm so sensitive to people's energies and I'm so sensitive to everything. They're called like HSPs, highly sensitive people. So I'm so sensitive to everything. So that's why everything's very hard for me because I feel for everyone. If I meet someone who's struggling, I feel their struggle.
I have a gift and a problem with that as well.
Exactly. And so you kind of take on other people's energy and it can be really hard, you know,
well, when
especially
you see
if someone
that are oppressed or have been, yeah. or have been treated incredibly unfairly.
Yeah. Yeah, or if, you know, my husband's having an off day and he's in a really bad mood, I absorb that energy and I try to fix it, you know, and
me
that's kind of what I've done.
We're the same person kind of in that
yeah.
way. I try
yeah,
to fix it. My wife's upset. I want to fix it. And she's yeah. like, you don't have to fix it.
Sometimes people are going to be upset and that's life, but I think it's hard for people that are very empathetic and, you know, we're always like, we don't want anyone to ever feel as bad as we have felt. You know, that's why we're always like, I don't want anyone to ever feel that way, you know? So I think that I just need to be careful with how much of other people's energy I absorb. And I need to be, you know, focused on just living my life instead of worrying about when I'm going to die. Because then I'm missing my life,
well,
you know?
Worrying you're going to die will throw you off game in driving and in being on a plane. It'll cause the panic attack. If
yeah.
you can, and that's the thing. My mother raised me in fear that I was going to die because she'd lost
two
children before I was born. So she didn't let me sleep over friends' houses. Let me do all. There's your dog. What's her name?
Nina the Weena.
Nina the Weena. That's actually what I call mine as well.
Dad, I'm throwing up.
That was a very diabolical, horrible laugh. That will not record well. So Nina, is she an emotional support dog when you get on a plane? Can you
She is. And that's like the other really scary thing is that I've actually trained her to be really, as you know, she's been in this room the whole time with this podcast and super quiet. And she'll just sit on my lap or sit next to me. And she's trained to do this to just go to sleep. But it's really sad because the airlines are now, because so many people that actually don't have emotional disorders have abused the situation and have brought on.
I knew somebody that did that and would take it in her Louis Vuitton bag and it was everything gross.
And the dog's barking or biting people, or they bring on an emotional support fucking peacock or an emotional support fucking pigeon.
I had an emotional support Tasmanian devil.
Exactly. And that's, so that's what happens. And now Alaska Airlines, I believe, is the first one that said no more emotional support pets, only service animals.
Yeah.
And so now I'm kind of screwed, because if the rest of the airlines take heed and follow, you know, Alaska Airlines, I have one of my biggest fears is flying, but I bring her. And I hold her, and she just sleeps on my lap the whole time, no matter how long the flight is.
Maybe there'll be a couple airlines that keep it going for you, because you do need her, right?
You know, I really hope so. I need her so bad, and I talked to my psychiatrist about it.
The letter?
But the only thing he can give me is emotional support, that she's emotional support. He can't make her a service animal, because I don't have, even though it's a mental thing, it's not a physical disability where she has to guide me or get me medication or whatever.
Can she provide a service? Can she get you coffee? Can she do errands?
I wish. She's so short. She's so little.
Can she
work, she's
a
like
fax
6 pounds. I know. She just, let's see how she just goes to sleep. She's such a good dog. Like, she's so quiet.
This is, if you want to watch on YouTube, now's the time. This is a beautiful image.
It's Nina just going to sleep. But yeah, so she's like my biggest comfort. And also, like, when I'm having a panic attack, sometimes before I take any medication, because I don't like to be reliant on it, I'll just hold her. And sometimes, like, feeling her heartbeat match her heartbeat, my heart will slow down to match her heartbeat because I can feel her breathing. You know how when you hold someone, when they're breathing, your breathing starts to match their breathing?
Yeah.
So, like, I do that if I'm really freaking out. I hold her really really tight, and I can feel her breathing, and then my heart will eventually match hers, so I don't have to always take medicine.
So
but
what would you recommend for people who have kids, for example, who have emotional issues that have been traumatic, or they're just born a certain way where they can't deal with things, and they're either autism or they're scared to death? Or, I mean, would you recommend a dog? Would you recommend they should, if they can do it, if they can afford to take care of it and all that?
I mean, there's so many options. So the first thing I wish is that I wish I was never put on an antidepressant right away, even though, yes, it has helped me. I wish that I would have been able to try holistic things first, because I've managed to actually, you know, like you said, when they put you into a psych ward, they kind of start you on the highest dose of things. And so I was put on a really high dose of an antidepressant called Effexor XR, which is one of the gnarliest ones to come off of. I have a friend who is also a heroin addict who was on Effexor too. And he said coming off of Effexor was worse than coming off of heroin. That's how bad Effexor is. And so I've managed to wean myself down from that really high dose all the way down to the starting dose of Effexor, which is 37.5 milligrams. And that's all I take every day. That's the only prescription medication I have.
And is there an immediate ease from it about an hour later?
From taking the Effexor?
Yeah.
No, I pretty much have been on it so long that I think my body just...
It's just part of your chemical makeup.
It's just part of my chemical makeup now. I don't notice like a huge difference or anything. But I will say that I wish my parents had tried natural things, because there are so many natural things out there that help with depression. For instance, 5-HTP is a natural occurring chemical that they call nature's Prozac. And it has been proven in double-blind studies to be more effective than Prozac. So, and this is something you can get at Rite Aid. So there, it starts at lowest doses, 50 milligrams. It works similarly to an SSRI, which is Prozac, which is like a Prozac or a Lexapro. So if you're not good with SSRIs, well, you wouldn't know. But you can try it. If it starts to make you feel weird or manic, then that's not the thing for you. But there's so many natural things to try, like SAMe, valerian root, St. John's wort, 5-HTP.
I can't take a product that has the word wort in it.
I know. They're interesting. There's lion's mane that helps people be calm. There's I find so much relief for my anxiety people in ashwagandha root. I swear by it. I take a CBD now every day, so I don't take my Valium. My Valium that I have is for emergencies only. Now I survive just during the day taking a CBD, which has ashwagandha root in it. And it's called, the one I take is called Terravita CBD. It's amazing. And it's been the strongest one. I know some people don't believe in CBD, but you put a drop under your tongue, a full dropper's worth under your tongue, and you wait 15 minutes and you are just chill. Like, not high, not drunk, not whatever. You're just mellow. And I love that. And so I take that like throughout the day whenever I'm feeling anxious, and it knocks that anxiety out. So I'm just like, there's just so many homeopathic things that have helped people that I wish my, you know, I was started with back in the day. And, you know, for some people it will be, you know, people who suffer from schizophrenia or people who suffer from severely debilitating mental illness, these things might not work for them, and that's fine. And then you can try medication, but I always suggest just doing your research on the medication to make sure it's not highly addictive, so you don't end up stuck on something for your entire life. And
this is what you would recommend to young girls that are sensitive, that are also prone. Now, how are you? Because some people say, it's a big debate all the time, that for some sensitive, special people, that marijuana is a gateway drug. That's what some people.
I don't love weed. Weed, actually, I've used to smoke weed all the time.
I did for a couple of years. I'm not a weed lover.
And I like the smell. Yeah, I've smoked weed and I've had great times high, but then I hate the munchies. I hate that because I would get fat from like eating so much after. And then I also hated that sometimes the weed would be, it was never like the same. You know what I mean? Right. Like, you'd smoke one time and it'd be awesome. And then the next time you smoke, sometimes you get too high. You get too high. It's like there's like no perfect way to manage it. And then I'd get really high sometimes and I'd have a panic attack because I'd be tripping. I'd be so high. Well,
edibles would do that. You know, I was on edibles.
Yeah, I mean, I've had it just from smoking.
Right.
A crazy strong weed. I've gotten so high where I was like, whoa, like thinking about my heart breathe. Like, my breathing went into manual instead of automatic. Where I had to like...
Wouldn't, for anxiety for younger people, wouldn't counseling or therapy, if they can get it, if they can afford it?
The homeopathic thing is great. I definitely recommend taking magnesium every night. Everyone should take magnesium.
What does magnesium do for you? I've got it in the closet.
Most people are deficient in magnesium. Magnesium is basically what keeps all your circuits going in your brain. And the brain is... A lot of people, almost like 90% of people, have a magnesium deficiency, and it won't hurt you if you take too much of it, you'll pee it out, except for people that I think have kidney disorders. They shouldn't take magnesium, but magnesium glycinate, to take that before bed, is one of the most productive things you can do for your body. It puts you in a relaxed state. The magnesium's so good for you. It's so brain healing. It's brain food, magnesium. And so I highly recommend.
It's a rock, isn't it? In chemistry, isn't it just a rock?
I mean, it's a mineral.
Oh, it is. So it's made of dirt?
Well, the one that I take is, I always recommend taking a liquid gel because it's, you know, easier into your bloodstream. But I take magnesium glycinate every night. And that has been a big change in my life.
Sleep?
It helps you sleep. It helps you unwind. It's extremely calming.
Well, that's my takeaway right now. I mean,
magnesium glycinate is incredible for bedtime. And then also, if you're having trouble sleeping, you take like melatonin and stuff too, right? Or not? Or do you not like melatonin?
It's like,
really? So you have like a really big trouble sleeping.
China shop, you know?
Okay. Your brain's like fully wired.
Yeah. But I kind of, if I lay there long enough, I get tired and I've been working out more, you know, Pilates.
Yeah. Exhausting your body is really good. Reading. And then, like you said, for people that are young and struggling right now, yeah, therapy is great. I mean, there's lots of online therapy. If you don't, you know, there's a company called BetterHelp.
Is it BetterHelp? Yeah, it's BetterHelp.
They're amazing. So I love them.
They got counselors there all the time.
All the time, 24 hours. You can get on there, betterhelp.com. Love BetterHelp. People should take advantage of that.
It's not expensive.
And if you don't like It's inexpensive. If you don't match, if you don't like your counselor, you can switch. All the people are accredited. Everything you tell them is private. You don't have to worry about it going anywhere.
Right.
So betterhelp.com is great for young people. And like I said, like, I think nutrition's a really big part of it too. I know people hate to hear that.
No, it's incredibly important. And I abuse it sometimes because, you know, I don't know. It's how I was raised, and I
know. Me too. I was raised Italian. All I want to do is eat pasta and cheese and bread.
That's
but
my
I
wife wants
I,
to eat all the time, and I don't want that because that goes to my belly. And then
and when
I
you
like
eat those
meat,
things,
my
you feel
blood
worse.
Is B positive, so I require it, but then I feel terrible about it because I know I don't want
to
kill things.
Well, you can get your protein. I actually try not to eat a lot of meat at all. I eat barely any meat now. I take there's actually a company that makes a gentle, it's called Gentle Iron. You can take that every day so you get your iron so
when
you're
I
not
tired.
When I
take too many supplements, I get diarrhea.
Well, that happens too. So don't take too many. Figure out which ones you really need. You know
but
what I mean?
Diarrhea
you don't need
bad.
To take a ton. It's cleansing, I think.
It is if you're waiting for a bus.
But yeah, I mean, actually a lot of the plant-based products now are full of protein. I mean,
I know,
you're getting, have you ever tried an Impossible Burger?
Oh,
they're
of course,
so
of course.
Good.
They're great. They're great. I mean, you know, and my wife's very food health conscious, and
yeah,
and she's all wrapped in it. Kelly knows everything about that. So I eat some of that stuff, but
yeah, a great thing also is if you're at home and you're struggling with anxiety, you don't have a lot of money.
I think that's most people, except for
okay. So here's something that you can do every day that'll change your life. And I used to do it every morning, but then I got lazy. Is making a celery juice. Okay, so you just need to get celery,
that's a good
call. Just plain celery.
I had a green juice yesterday, and once the diarrhea stopped, I loved it.
But if you just drink plain celery with you don't mix it with anything.
Cucumbers
you just take
are
raw
good,
celery.
Though. I like cucumbers.
But apparently, and I learned this from the medical medium, mixing it with other stuff really dissolves the, you know, potency of it. And so I followed this for about a month and a half, and my anxiety was cut in half drinking celery juice every morning. A big 8-ounce glass of celery juice on an empty stomach before you start your day. If that doesn't change your anxiety, write to me and let me know, because you have to do it every day. Not mix it with anything. Don't put a Granny Smith apple in it. Don't put lemon
in
it. Don't put anything
in
it. You have to just drink straight plain celery juice for a month. Yeah. So that'll help with anxiety too. There's a lot of tricks and things that I've learned, you know? And so that's how I'm able to function.
I'm so glad that it's so great that you do a podcast and that it's you're on your 100th episode. It's like such it's really great. And I'm gonna talk about you a little more after we say goodbye, because we've
okay.
talked a lot today.
This was a long episode. Yeah. I hope it's okay, and hopefully not everyone's asleep
I'm
by now.
Your episode on your show soon.
Yep.
Which is called Worst First.
Worst First with Brittany Furlan.
Okay, because I always go Brittany Furlan's Worst First. I always want to say your name first to give you top billing.
It's hilarious.
Mine has my name first because I don't know why. Because I thought they could replace me.
I feel like you were, I truly feel like you were here for me this episode. So it makes sense.
You're so sweet. I'm so glad we
thanks
did
for
this.
Having me. Yeah. Thanks for having me. It's been so fun.
Thank you. You've made me think a lot, which is really good.
Yay.
And
hopefully
if
not
you're
too
having
much.
A real problem and you're feeling fearful, I'm an email away. So.
Oh, thank you. Same.
And tell Tommy Lee the
so
same.
Nice.
He's really feeling stressed.
He has no fear. That guy used to shoot black tar heroin. He has no fear at all.
That's
He's
true.
Not scared of anything.
Well, have a wonderful night.
You
thank
too,
you.
Bob. Thanks for having me. Say bye, Nina.
Bye, Nina.
Bye.
All righty. That was Brittany Furlan. And I just really enjoyed that conversation. And I learned a lot. I learned quite a bit, actually. She is an interesting, funny person. And, you know, as all of us are, trying to find our way. And she has some solutions for it. And I hope it maybe helps some of you guys, gals, listen to what could help you with panic and fear, because we're in a world where there's a hell of a lot of it. And just coping and getting through and being kind to yourself and try not to be afraid of death. That's a big one, right? What'd you get from the podcast? Don't be afraid of death. Well, easy to say. So thank you. Listen to her podcast. It's really Worst Firsts, but it's really about her and how she looks at life. And it's a very open discourse. And that's why I enjoy her and was really happy to have her as a guest. So do what you do. Rate, review, subscribe, follow if that's how you listen to your podcast. You can watch us on the YouTube. There's not many people there looking at it, so try it. It's just excellent, excellent technology. It's a two shot till the end of time. Sending you my best. There's a number you can call up there. I'll be announcing soon when I'm going to make some calls to you guys. Just stay well. Stay well and be safe. And if you're not an anti-vaxxer, get the damn thing when it's available. And let's get ourselves all well so we can get life back. All right? So just take care of yourself. And I'll talk to you on the next episode.